On this episode, we discuss a wearable tech lawsuit by Philips, Pokemon Go continuing to thrive, there being a plan to bring back Mars samples, and SPE rounds up a bunch of other space news that we missed over the last little bit. Plus, I surprised the guys live with a piece of gear that they had no idea that I had purchased. This and more in this week's show.
I'm Anthony Bachman from All Things Good and Nerdy, a geeky podcast part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other fantastic geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
This is the official GunnaGeek.com show. Each week we run down the latest news and happenings in the world of geek. These are your hosts for the show, Steven, Chris, and SP.
Welcome to episode 317 of the official GunnaGeek.com show. I am Steven Chandra, and I am pleased to say that Chris Farrell is here again this week.
Where's my money, Steven? Where's my money?
What? Why do you want money? Why do you want money? I'm not understanding. Why do you want money, Chris Farrell?
My contract dictates that I should get paid at some point. That point is now.
Well, you know what? I have a better contract with my fellow co-host of Better Podcasting, Stargate Pioneer, and he's here as well.
Yeah, we got to work on those terms. We got to get the lawyers involved because we got a border involved between us. And I am just getting fed up telling the IRS that I don't owe you any money anymore.
Okay, so here's a question for you two. This week, we are doing an all news show. All news, all the time. And I have a question for you about that, SP.
Quest.
Why is there no Virgin Galactic news that you have this week? Let's spoil it right now at the beginning here.
Because you will make fun of me if I talk about that company. And I refuse to talk about that company because you will make jokes the whole time about the name of the company.
I wouldn't make jokes like that. You give me one example where I have taken a low-hanging fruit joke.
Every other time I've talked about that company.
So, Steven, you might need to make a resolution, much like I did and we talked about in the pre-show. I stopped making Steven's mom jokes years ago. Mm-hmm. Years ago, because it was low-hanging fruit. You too should resolve to get rid of the easy, low-hanging fruit jokes and become a sophisticated connoisseur of humor like myself and Stargate Pioneer.
I think you're still waiting on the second part of that. Yeah, you dropped the jokes, but there's no sophistication yet. Let's go ahead and move on to the news.
The gray in my beard says sophisticated.
Me too.
This is a really weird news article that I wanted to kick us all off on because it's a little surprising to me, and it's about the company Philips. Now, you might know them as Philips Hue or Philips Random Generic Products that are rebranded as a whole bunch of different things, or Philips Shavers, any of these things. But did you know that Philips apparently also wanted to be Philips Wearable Market?
That's well, right. Everyone wanted to.
That's true. Philips is accusing both Fitbit and Garmin of stealing proprietary technology, and they are issuing a lawsuit as such. The U.S. International Trade Commission announced on Friday that it is investigating specific, quote, wearable monitoring devices, systems, and components, end quote, in light of this recent complaint by Philips' parent company and the North American subsidy. This is interesting because the complaint is alleging that certain companies, listing those two there, have infringed on Philips patents for the wearable market. Now, it doesn't say specifically what that technology is or what it is that they're suing about, but it's really interesting to think about this.
It's the case is based on four patents owned by Philips related to smartwatch and fitness tracker functions like motion tracking, alarm reporting, and other things. So that's a little bit more specific than you gave.
That's fair enough. I'm glad you read that part of the article. I didn't. But it is still pretty general because like the concept of motion tracking and alarm reporting, that seems pretty generic for a lawsuit. Like what is alarm reporting?
Doesn't matter as long as they're able to put it in a patent or whatnot and be able to try and defend that intellectual property.
I guess. It's like when your morning clock alarm goes off or your phone alarm, whatever, your wake up alarm goes off and your wife hits you over the head with a pillow and suffocates you because she's reporting that the alarm is going off and you are not waking up.
I thought this was like that time that I had to go to the Gunna Geek HR department. I was ringing the alarm and reporting you, SP.
There's been a lot of false accusations against both Chris and myself from the owner. Matter of fact, we have countersued with a hostile work environment suit.
You know how you fix that, Steven? You pay me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I find it interesting because of the fact that this is Phillips of all people who are trying to claim this lawsuit, because I don't think we ever really got a Phillips product out of them to do with this. And I never really heard rumblings about anything wearable tech Phillips wise.
What do you mean? There's a whole screwdriver named after the company.
There's those jokes there, those low hanging fruit jokes. That's what that is. Mm. No, seriously, I find this really fascinating, but apparently you guys don't. That's fine. We can just skip over this.
Whoa.
I do think it's fascinating because I think we're going to see a lot of this. I think there's been a lot of corporate espionage in this digital age that people are just starting to figure out, because you don't know what other companies have done in order to get to the tech that they are enjoying today. And once that is discovered, then you're going to see a lot of lawsuits going back and forth on that.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's very interesting. And I think you're right. And the other thing that might come to do with it is the fact that Chris Farrell said this 1,000 times, that the wearable tech market is essentially been a failure. And so this is where I think we're going to start to see some of these people try to get back some of the money they've lost, is because of the fact that the wearable tech market didn't take off as people had planned.
What do you mean it's been a failure? You've got a lot of wearable tech out there now. Please describe why you think it's been a failure.
I'll defer to you, Chris.
I said Android Wear has been a failure.
No,
it's tough to say that things like Fitbit and health trackers and stuff have been a failure. Now it's going to be interesting with Google having acquired Fitbit to see what happens there with the development of some revision of Android Wear that might not suck. I don't know. Ironically, yes, I am wearing an Android Wear watch still, because honestly, and this is going to make Steven's skin crawl that I say this, if Apple Watch worked with Android, I'd own an Apple Watch. I totally would. I'm not switching to an Apple phone to have an Apple Watch, though.
It was really funny. I didn't tell you guys this story yet. So over the course of the break, I had to go out and buy a new car. That's a story for another day. The actual loan officer at the bank had a smartwatch on. He had just gotten it for the holidays. It was a big old Samsung watch. I was just curious. Like, okay, what do you got there? He's like, Samsung. How do you like it? He goes, I don't know, man. I just barely can tell the time on it right now. I have no idea what this thing can do.
I guess for me, the thing is, I think that we've seen companies spend more money on wearable tech for not the gain that they originally set out to be. And I think even if you look at Samsung, they've done a variety of different things, and I don't know that they're where they probably wanted to be originally. So, and also just aside from watches, other wearable tech is not really gone anywhere. And I would argue that the wearable tech market, it's mostly Apple at this point. Yes. So I think when you look at the whole big picture of wearable tech beyond Apple, it has been a failure. And that's sort of my take on it. And I think I bet a lot of, I won't actually bet, but my thoughts are that a lot of companies have spent more money on trying to get a good wearable tech product for a net loss. So that's where I think lawsuits are going to come in.
Most people at work, they either have an Apple Watch. I can't wear anything on my wrist because of a nerve damage issue that I have in my spine. Most people in my office either wear an iWatch, Apple Watch, or a Fitbit. And they're wearing one or the other. They are wearing it. You guys, I don't know about your works. Are your people around you wearing these fitness trackers?
And who did I mention was being lawsuit or in this lawsuit? Fitbit, because they're one of the people who have done some form of success in this. So
right, but that's my point. There is success in this.
Yeah, I guess there is some success. I don't think that as a whole, wearable tech has taken off to where it was supposed to.
It's tough to be successful. That's why Pebble has collapsed at this point in time. Because remember, a lot of this got kickstarted, no pun intended, with the Pebble Watch Kickstarter, as everyone's like, oh, this is a really cool idea. And then you saw the other folks that were originally fitness trackers like, ooh, we can adapt some of these smartwatch ideas. And you start getting hybrid products like Fitbit has. Then you had Android watches, which arguably there's not much time being put into them to develop them. And the processors suck for them. So they're not great. And the hope is they get better. But the Apple Watch, as much as people scoffed with the Gen 1 products, I think it's very hard to say it has not been successful based off the number of people you see wearing them, you see them product placed everywhere, you see them moving in sales and things like that. So I'm not the Apple hater here. That's Steven's role. So I will actually say Apple Watch has been a good product. And like I said, it's such a product that I'm interested in that if I could make one work with Android, I would totally do it, but it is not enough of a draw for me to be like, I'm going to switch to the Apple OS for my phone because I'm too deeply entrenched in Android at this point in time. I don't want to swap back.
Fair enough. I told the story on the podcast last year. The Apple Watch 4 saved my dad's life.
Yes.
There is no if, ands, or buts about it. My dad would be dead right now if it wasn't for the Apple Watch 4. So you got that. Also, along those lines, that is why all these devices are popular, because those two devices are sending fitness data and tracking data back to their health tracking apps for their medical insurance. And if you get a certain amount of steps in over the year, if you get a certain amount of activity level or calories burned or whatever throughout the year, you make that gate to go to the cheaper health insurance or the cheaper, the thing that you have to pay the
premium.
Like you go to the doctor's office copay. And you pay copay. Yeah. The cheaper copay and stuff like that. So there's a reason why these are being worn is because there is a monetary value to the individual to make that happen. And in my case, you know, it literally saved my dad's life.
Fair enough. Well, I'm just interested to see what other lawsuits are around the corner. And also looking forward to the Philips Hue watch, because they'll have some form of Hue watch now coming out.
It's big tech. Lawsuits are everywhere.
Moving on to the next news one here. Pokemon Go. What's up over there, Chris Farrell?
So Pokemon Go, it's hard to believe that this came out, back in 2016, 2017? It's been a while. And when you go and look at apps, especially ones that have microtransactions, it tends to be they start off strong, then they taper off into nothing. Well, Pokemon Go, it's kind of been the exception to the rule. In fact, it's made more money than ever. According to mobile analytics firm Sensor Tower, they had a record year in 2019, taking in an estimated $900 million via in-app purchases. That means it surpassed its launch year revenue after seeing a drop-off in both players and spending back in 2017. So why is this important? Well, normally free-to-play games come out the gate huge, like we were talking about earlier, in regards to revenue and popularity, then slowly decline as time goes on. Or they start small and build towards a peak and then kind of taper off. Pokemon Go doesn't follow that trend. It started out in 2016. It was huge. It went viral. It was everywhere. You saw news stories about people raiding together. Brought in $832 million in 2016. Then in 2017, the buzz dropped a little bit. Brought in $582 million. Well, evidently, Niantic saw the writing in the wall there, which was, if we don't do something to re-energize this player base, we might lose Pokemon Go and people will stop playing, or not as many people will keep playing. So what did they do? They introduced a whole boatload of new features over the next couple of years, like raid battles, trading with other users, AR camera effects, and carved out a dedicated and pretty lucrative niche in the mobile industry. By the end of 2018, in-app purchases had soared again to about $816 million. And then, like we mentioned before, $900 million this year. So they've kind of reversed the curse when it comes to a lot of these augmented reality and in-app purchase games, bringing in a boatload of money. They estimate the Niantic has brought in $3.1 billion to date on Pokemon Go. Now, that does not mean Niantic has all of that money in their bank. They have to give some of it to the Pokemon Company, which is partially owned by Nintendo. And they have also turned that around and started investing in some other augmented reality things. We saw there's a Harry Potter version called Wizards Unite. and they relaunched Ingress as Ingress was the game they started that is pretty much what spawned Pokemon Go and all these things. They relaunched Ingress with a new version. So they are strong into this augmented reality gaming sphere. And I thought it was really interesting to see how Pokemon Go has defied the traits. And say what you want about Niantic, and we've been semi-critical on this show before. Suncast was on before and helped talk to us about Pokemon Go Fest and the debacle that was the first attempt at it. It seems like they must be doing something right, or we're all just really brainwashed, want to keep playing the game if they had a record year 3 years after the game came out.
I have to say something. I've got it on really good authority that they've gotten a little scummy now, charging for different things, apparently making it more pay to play. I know someone who is heavily invested in this game, and that's their words. Quote, it was Suncast. Suncast actually is in our chat right now talking about that. So I just wanted to mention that right now. But it's interesting because Suncast is probably the guy that I know who has been most dedicated to this. I don't know that I know anybody else. I do, however, know people that I work with that got into it within the last couple of years, which is interesting from that perspective. New faces coming in compared to, you know, people like Suncast who started on early and continued. So I just think it's interesting seeing a long-term person like Suncast say that.
In early 2019, a coworker that I work with, he runs the team that's adjacent to mine. He got exposed to the social aspect of Pokemon Go. And by that, I mean his soon-to-be ex-wife hooked up with somebody through Pokemon Go and is now living with them.
That is the dark side of it.
It's a matchmaker. That's what it is. It was the matchmaker feature.
Part of what I have enjoyed about Pokemon Go is the community of people that I've met around it. I have a regular group of folks that I go and do raids with once or twice a month in the summer and the winter. It kind of tapers off to like once a month or so. But we'll make a plan of, hey, we're going to hit up all these Pokestops. We're going to do these 5-star raids. And we'll have a convoy of 10, 12 people, and we'll go around and do that. And it's a fun way to meet other people, to have chats about stuff, and to just play a game that everyone likes. And I was very surprised by how welcoming a lot of the people were, at least in the community around here, which is my wife and I, we started playing when it first launched, and we took a break because it was just not great back when the profits dipped that we talked about. And then we came back because some friends of ours were still playing. It was just really cool how embracing and welcoming most of the community was, and all of the community events that are organized around it. There's like large Facebook groups for my community that are, hey, here's where everyone's meeting up to do these raids. We have Discord servers to coordinate raids amongst other folks. It's been a very pleasant experience. And at least in my opinion, Pokemon Go's success isn't necessarily because of the gameplay all the time, but more because of the community that's been built up around it and the friendships you make of just being like, hey, let's go play the game. This is fun.
I have to say, those people I was referencing that I work with, they helped me to finally start up the app after a couple of years of not using it, just because they wanted me to do something so they could get a gift if they gifted me. I didn't understand it. Something like
we'll
that.
Go with that.
Something like that. I genuinely haven't since then. However, they were telling me about how they also do the local raid thing and stuff, and that did seem really interesting to me, that social aspect. So I can see that. And I don't know that is as much a credit to the game as it is the game's ability to have created that, like, because it that comes down to the people and the
people. A lot of that got created outside of what Niantic did. Exactly. That's why there's all these Discord servers, because there was no way in game to coordinate these things. So it's fascinating how the game spun off all of these things. And if Niantic wanted to come in with like some heavy-handed action, like, no, you guys can't use Discord or these things, and find some way to block them from working with Pokemon Go, or to block like the Pokemon IV apps and stuff like that, I think they realized they would be damaging the community they've built, because hey, they like making almost $1 billion in in-app purchases each year.
Yes. Well, let's move on to our next news point here, which I believe has something to do with a sample that SP is providing after eating a Mars bar. I think that's what it is. Something for testing, biological testing. Is that what this is?
Got a sample for you, Steven. Open wide. Now, what we're going to talk about today is kind of a mini SP space symposium. And we've been talking a lot about planetary exploration missions in the SP Space Symposium recently. This is about a upcoming Mars sample return mission. This is based on an article on space.com by Mike Wall. We're going to talk about a lot about Mike Wall today. Wall to wall, Mike Wall. Mm-hmm. So in this particular article, we're going to talk about the upcoming Mars sample return mission. It's actually going to start this year when we are actually going to send a probe to Mars to start the sample return. So that starts with NASA's 2020 Mars rover, and it's scheduled to launch in July of 2020, land on the red planet inside a crater called Jezero Crater in February 2021. And in that crater, Mars 2020 rover will collect and cache promising samples from the Jezero Crater, which was a lake and a river billions of years ago. It was actually a river delta. So you're going to have a lot of murky brown that can think of the Mississippi Delta River or the Nile Delta River. There's just a lot of sediment that collects there and a lot of capability to encase life for the long term. Now, the samples are meant for an eventual return to Earth, where scientists in well-equipped labs, and we'll talk about that in a second, around the world can scrutinize them in exacting detail for any evidence of Martian organisms. The current plan, which is not yet official, but it does envision two key launches in 2026, and that is the ESA's, or the European Space Agency's, Earth Return Orbiter, now we'll call it ERO, and NASA's Sample Retrieval Lander called SRL. Here's the detailed plan here. Stay with me. This is going to be a little walk, but we'll eventually get there.
A little walk? I really don't feel like walking very far. So it is a little walk?
It is a little walk.
He doesn't have his fitness tracker on because he's afraid of Phillips suing him.
Get your phone out and do your Pokemon Go app, and you can do some Pokestops along the way.
Perfect. Okay, let's go for this walk then.
Okay. So ERO, or the Earth Return Orbiter, will make its way to Mars orbit, where SRL, or the Sample Retrieval Lander, will drop a stationary lander. The ESA-provided Sample Fetch Rover, or SFR, there's a lot of acronyms here, and a small rocket called the Mars Ascent Vehicle, or MAV, those of you who are Martian fans know what the MAV is, near the Mars 2020 landing site. The SFR will pick up the cached Mars 2020 samples, which will be encased in sealed tubes, like vacuum tubes, and haul them back to the MAV. The MAV will then launch into Mars orbit, where it will deploy the container, which has the tubes of the samples. The ERO will then pluck this precious cargo out of the void, just like Iron Man thing in The Martian, and haul it back towards the Earth, and it will jettison the container once it is in the crosshairs of our planet. The samples will then land on Earth somewhere in the 2031 timeframe, if all goes according to this preliminary plan. That's 11 years from now. So we got to wait 11 years for these samples to come back from Mars. You guys going to wait that long?
I've been waiting that long for wearable tech to become successful. So yeah.
I think wearable tech will be successful by 2031. Just a guess there.
I don't think it's been in the works for 11 years really either.
How dare you take my joke and destroy it. I will wait for anything, SP, you tell me to wait for.
Okay, we'll leave that comment alone because I'm catching some subtext from it. Okay, there's going to obviously be public reaction to this. You guys were probably too young to remember the public reaction of us bringing back the moon's rocks, the rocks from the moon. I'm just guessing. You guys don't remember the public reaction for that, right?
You are correct. I was not alive for that. I don't
remember. Yeah, that spawned a heck of a lot of movies, sci-fi movies, which you may or may not have seen on a Saturday afternoon on FX or something like that, where you have these viruses or life forms or whatever that come from the moon because of that. Well, you're going to get, guys, we talked a lot about what it was a year and a half ago. We talked a lot about flat Earth.
Yes.
These are the people that are going to spin up about the rocks returning from Mars.
It's so true. It's unbelievably true. And, you know, I have to say, there should be caution because we don't know. Everything we know about everything is hypothesis to do with space. So there should always be a level of caution, but we shouldn't panic.
So the arrival is going to catch a lot of people off guard in 2031. You know, the people that don't pay attention to this stuff until it's actually happening.
Yeah.
And there's probably going to be a lot of fear, anxiety, and confusion. So the members of the International Mars Sample Return Team need to start educating and engaging people about the effort now, so that in 2031, it's not that big of a deal. Although we've been educating people for how many hundreds of years about the Earth is round, and we still had flat Earth people.
I was just going to say, the second part of my point is we should always have caution when we're doing anything. Because again, if you think about it, anything that is like not been actually properly tested here is 100% theory.
Well, I was going to say, because a lot of people are idiots and don't believe in science, is why we need to have caution.
However, the thing is, we have people who have been educated on these things and they've done the research. And so we need to pass that education and that caution and all of those things that have been, they're way behind us now because of the experts in the field. We need to make sure people understand that, but it's not going to matter because of the flat Earth syndrome.
So let's go through some of the education pieces of trying to tell the public of what's actually going to happen in 2031. So after arriving on Earth, this Martian material will first be vetted at a specially constructed sample receiving facility, which will be designated to prevent contamination in both directions. And by that, I mean nothing unwanted can get in to taint the samples, and nothing from the samples can get out into the wider world and cause Stephen and his entire country to die. So the SRF, that's what we're going to call it now, another acronym, the Sample Receiving Facility, hasn't been built, nor has a site been chosen for it yet. But the Sample Return Project can use existing biosafety level 4 labs as a baseline. And for those of you in the know, biosafety level 4 labs are the most secure labs on the planet. These are the ones that keep nasty viruses such as Ebola from spilling out and contaminating the world. Also, as part of the communication package, they need to get out the benefits of the return mission. It's really important to state the scientific bounty that is going to come and represented by the return of the Martian material. Most importantly, perhaps we'll find out whether Earth life is alone in the universe, or if life has existed in other planets other than Earth, like on Mars.
So what I'm afraid of is they're going to find that rock that Suncast found and wrote Suncast was here on Mars with the secret Mars base. And is that going to let the cat out of the bag about NASA? Or are they just going to think there's an alien named Suncast that knows and writes English on Mars?
I'll go for the Suncast is an alien theory because, well, we've been postulating that for years now anyway.
Suncast, please feel free to confirm or deny in the chat room.
I have to say, by the way, that I think what we just learned is Esprit is pro murdering extraterrestrial life. I think that's what he just said.
What?
And the reason why that is because he just
we're just talking about properly communicating scientific fact here, and you're saying that I'm pro against or pro
you are for because killing. You talked about all of the containment things in such a positive manner. And what happens when we bring back that life that we don't realize is life and we shove it in that container and we murder it by accident because it's in the container in the storage thing. It can't live. It can't eat. You just said that you're willing to kill the extraterrestrial life. That's what you said.
As long as it's got a Canadian flag on the tube that kills the alien life, I think we're all okay.
Guys, this is how we get Venom.
Thank you very much for educating us on this. Because all kidding aside, I love the theory of this sort of stuff. This sort of stuff I can read for hours and hours and hours because it is such an interesting concept to think about the fact that we don't know. We have good reason to believe, but it is all theory. And so we have to take these precautions. It could be that we're bringing back something that is zero harmful. There's more harm when you go out to your patio, right? But we have to take such crazy precautions. And I just love it. I love it.
This precaution doesn't necessarily pertain to extraterrestrial life. This precaution also is being taken on Earth. on both of the poles, when we're drilling into the ice cores and we're going deeper and deeper and deeper, we don't know what kind of microbes that we're bringing back because of that. So we're trying to contain all of that. And it's one of the reasons why we haven't drilled into the lakes that are underneath the ice caps on both poles either, is because we don't want to contaminate them with the drill bit as it's going down.
Look, I saw Star Trek Enterprise. That's how we get the Borg out.
But I also know that, again, SP's lying about this because he's told me that when you do drill below that, it's some awesome ice fishing. He's told me that.
Well, in Minnesota, we're all about the awesome ice fishing. So, yeah. Let's get them walleye. Yeah. Don't you know?
All right. Before SP does a bunch of really quick space news roundup, you had some Apple discussion, Chris. You're trying to rebrand in 2020. You're like, I'm going to get myself back to an iPhone. I'm going to talk all positive about Apple all the time. And I'm just going to be the Apple guy on the show. That's what
this is, an Android phone and an Android watch. Now, I did buy a new iPad last weekend, but that doesn't mean I'm the Apple guy.
He bought an iPad. That's so cool.
I've had an iPad for like 6 years.
Well, you failed at this resolution then, Chris.
You know, it was the iPad for you or for your wife?
It was for me.
Oh, he's admitting it. It's for him.
I've always talked about that. I like my iPad. It's my preferred tablet of choice because Android tablets are terrible.
Okay.
Just terrible.
What's your news, Chris?
So it's interesting. We've talked about a little bit on this show before about trading in a phone hardware and things like that and prices. And it used to be that one of the better deals out there versus selling it for yourself was Apple has a trade-in program if you're buying new phones through them. And we've seen more and more rumors of the iPhone 12 coming out. And right as those rumors started picking up steam and people started going, ooh, maybe I'm ready to upgrade, a bunch of eagle-eyed viewers, who frequent the Mac Rumors forums, discovered that with no warning, which they're allowed to do, Apple has quietly slashed trade-in values across its entire iPhone range. So what does that mean? Well, if you have an iPhone XS Max, you could get up to $500 trade-in credit now. It was $600 before. XS, up to $420, was $500 before. It seems like they've knocked anywhere from $60 to $100 across the board off on all their phones, all the way down to the iPhone 6S, where for now you could trade it in for $80 when previously they would have given you $100. So why is this a big deal? It's not necessarily a big deal. It's more a situational awareness thing for folks because in today's world, especially if you're a tech enthusiast, you get that itch and you're like, oh man, I really need that new phone. And to try and make the hurt of it a little less, you look into trading it, selling it somewhere, things like that. And for a lot of folks, yes, you could go on a site like Swappa or eBay and go and sell your phone, but then you've got to take time and wait for it to happen. Or you could take a little bit less money for the convenience of trading in through Apple or Google, because I've traded a phone into Google before. But those prices, as these phones get more and more expensive, are getting cut quicker and quicker. And this is not me taking a shot at Apple, being, oh, screw you, Apple, for lowering those prices. Google did the same thing. I was looking at the Pixel 4 prior to its release, and I was like, oh, I can trade in my 2XL, and I think it was for $240 at the time. Like, when the 4XL came out, then it dropped to, like, $160. And I think right now it's down to, like, $140 for my phone. These values drop real fast. And if you want to sell it, your best bet's probably not trading it in. It's going through the secondary market and trying to work a deal through Craigslist, Swappa, eBay, Facebook Marketplace, something like that, where you might get something a little closer to what you paid. So if you're in the market, just keep an eye because those prices are dropping fast.
Okay, this is the reason why. And I know for a fact that this is the case. Legal disclaimer, I don't know for a fact that this
is Apple hater Steven coming up with his official opinion on why this is the case.
This coming from the Cybertruck
hater.
This
is because of the fact that we're going to see a big drop in the high price tag of phones. The companies have listened to us.
Really?
And they've gone, people don't want to give us money. We're going to lower the price. And they're going to go. So, well, if this is, we're going to sell a brand new phone for $800, we can't be giving people $600. So, obviously, they've listened to us and they have a heart, Chris. That's what it is. Apple has a heart.
What's happening here is Apple has not regained the amount of money on the hardware that they have in the past, and they're trying to make it up on the trade-in deal. I actually am more and more for the trade-in. I used to keep the phones. Matter of fact, for the viewer, I've been holding up several of the phones that I have, and these are only some of the phones that the family has had over the years. I think I got some S6s, 6s's, 6s plus, whatever, in here. And those were all good phones for the time, and most of them, I think, still work. And one I know doesn't is my old phone. But I'm more of the ilk here that you're going to need a new phone every few years. And the question is, do you wait that additional year and pay maybe a little bit more on the price of the phone, or do you trade in your phone like after a year or two? There's got to be, I haven't done the math, there's got to be a breaking point on when the deal is the strongest. Now, we bought some of the phones last year, the SX Maxes last year. We bought two of them in the family, and I waited until there was a deal to buy them. I've been waiting for that same deal, even $100 off the price of the phone, and I haven't seen it yet. There've all been these trade-ins deals this year. There has not been a deal. So I'm at the point now in January where I'm like, I can eke out another few months with my 8 plus.
Yeah.
And I can make it to the October timeframe and get the next generation. I'm going to pay a little bit more, but I'm going to get more of the capabilities that I want. I want a terabyte of storage. I want just different things that I'm not going to get. And the one thing that I'm worried about is I would still want that lightning plug because of CarPlay issues. So if I don't see that coming, I might pull the trigger early and get an 11 Pro Max.
Okay. So my true authentic actual belief in this, all kidding aside that I was just joking, is it comes down to the change in what consumers are wanting right now. We've talked about it on the show. A lot of people are willing to go with last year's model, the light version, whatever it is. And when you're doing a big mass trade-in thing, it banks on volume and it banks on people trading in the right phones where the averages even out. And so some people might be trading in last year's phone and they're getting a good deal on that. Some people, they might be overpaying a little bit for the lower end phone. And I think that you're probably going to see that more and more people are willing to really just ride their phone till it's useless. So then what sort of trade-ins are they getting? Are they really, is there any value in that mass trade-in anymore? Probably not, because people are really just waiting and running those phones till their ends, or buying phones that are inherently cheaper. So I think it probably comes down to consumer habits. That's my thoughts.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Let's go back to the space news here before I give the last news point. And you had a couple of things you wanted to quickly touch on, SP, right?
I did. There are both articles that were on space.com by Mike Wall in the last week. There are both events that I wanted to cover that had occurred since we had last recorded before the holidays. So we'll start by talking about Boeing Starliner. This is an article that was on space.com by Mike Wall. It was titled NASA Mulls Next Steps for Boeing Starliner Astronaut Taxi After Shortened Test Flight. We didn't get a chance to talk about the shortened test flight, but now we're going to go into it a little bit. So on December 20th, 2019, Starliner launched on an uncrewed mission called the Orbital Test Flight, or OFT. We talked about that before, which was designed to demonstrate the capsule's ability to fly NASA's astronauts to and from the International Space Station. OFT was supposed to last 8 days and feature an autonomous docking with the station, but Starliner suffered a glitch with its onboard timing system, aka the computer, shortly after liftoff, and got stranded in an orbit that was too low to allow for a rendezvous with the ISS, meaning it didn't have enough fuel to get up to the higher orbit of the ISS. So the Starliner, aka the reusable capsule, ended up zooming around Earth by itself for 48 hours, then coming down for a picture-perfect landing in New Mexico's White Sands Missile Test Range on December 22nd, 2019. NASA's Administrator Jim Bridenstine wrote in an update Tuesday, January 7th, quote, NASA is evaluating the data received during the mission to determine if another uncrewed demonstration is required. This decision is not expected for several weeks as teams take the necessary time for this review, unquote. Bridenstine also announced that NASA and Boeing are forming a joint team to investigate Starliner's timing anomaly and to figure out how to make sure it does not happen again. Brennan C. said, quote, once underway, the investigation is targeted to last about 2 months before the team delivers its final assessment, unquote. Starliner is currently being transformed from White Sands to Boeing's facilities on Florida's Space Coast, where the capsule will be examined in even greater detail by the joint team. So, guys, a couple of things here. One, you have the Starliner, which failed a portion of its test to go to the International Space Station. It didn't explode. It actually went up and down successfully in that manner, but it didn't attain the correct orbit. This was rather a common occurrence in the early space flight history back in the 60s and the 70s. This sort of thing happened all the time. Matter of fact, it still happened in the 80s and 90s as we were transitioning into more advanced upper stage boosters to get into a higher orbit or geo or stuff like that. So this is not uncommon. However, the Starliner is supposed to be a manned system capable of taxiing astronauts. I think you want to get the engine part of that right before you put a human in the loop. So I'm guessing, and I'm not sure, but I'm guessing that this will force Boeing into an additional flight.
You know, that's the thing that's really interesting to me about these sort of failures is the fact that we've talked about it on the show. We are right now very dependent in America and around North around America on other countries to get us up to space. And because we had a reliable way, which obviously couldn't have continued, but we had a reliable way, and now we're trying to get. Well, we had an overall reliable way. Sorry, SP is doing the air quotes for the audio listener. But we had something that we most of the time could use, and now we don't. And we're trying to get that back. So every little failure, it's like, well, when are we going to get back to be able to sending our people there ourselves? Now, there's all sorts of arguments that could be made that maybe the international development is a good thing and whatnot, but. I want to see this succeed. I really do. And it was an interesting setback to read about when you linked this to me earlier.
Yeah, it is definitely a thing that I'm glad that we have two ponies in the race right now, basically, because we have been short-sighted in the past going single source on things. And some of it's just been costs. Like, the space shuttle costs a lot of money, so you're not going to buy two versions of the space shuttle. It's just not going to happen. But Boeing's not the only horse in the race here. There's another one, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I think it's important to get there as soon as we can, but get there safely. So, like I said, I don't want to be the astronaut that's riding this Boeing capsule when the engine might or may not work.
Yeah.
And fair or not, Boeing's had a bit of a rough go of it lately.
No.
Yeah, just a little bit.
What's your second thing that you wanted to quickly touch on here, SP?
Yeah, this is another article by Mike Wall. And if I haven't mentioned it yet in this episode, I have a lot of admiration for Mike Wall, a lot of respect for him. He's been doing this sort of thing for quite some time and is a bit of an authority when it comes into the space reporting and just the space industry in itself. So, Mike, thank you very much for continuing to do the great work that you're doing. This article that he did was titled Crucial Safety Test of SpaceX's Crew Dragon Capsule is Delayed to January 18th. We've been talking about SpaceX's Crew Dragon for a while, and it had a little issue with the escape rockets that exploded on the pad that we actually looked at video of, and it was leaked out and it shouldn't have been, but yeah, there was a big explosion on that. Well, they've kind of recovered from that. And they are looking at doing some test flights to actually test the escape rockets in flight. Now, the crucial in-flight abort test is what they're calling it, or IFA, had been targeted for January 11, 2020, and it will now take place no earlier than January 18th. And this was via an announcement from NASA on January the 6th. Now, during the uncrewed IFA, the Crew Dragon will launch atop a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket from NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Shortly after liftoff, the capsule will separate from the booster and use its Super Draco escape thrusters to blast itself clear of its rocket ride, demonstrating the ability to keep astronauts safe in the event of a launch emergency. The IFA is the last big milestone SpaceX needs to achieve before Crew Dragon can fly astronauts. If all goes well with the abort test, the California-based company can start prepping in earnest for the Demo 2 mission, which will carry NASA's Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley to and from the International Space Station. So in the grand scheme of things... So would
this be Ernest Goes to the International Space Station? Is it that the movie? You said in earnest. So you don't know the Ernest movies? I snorted because it was such a bad joke. Sorry.
It
Remember
is.
What we said about the better jokes, Steven, not the low-hanging fruit?
Yeah, right.
That's
2021.
Yeah.
2021. So what you have here is a issue that I think might be closer to operational than Boeing's issue. Although, if I'm an astronaut, I'm still thinking... I need those rockets to work right and not blow up the capsule that I'm in. So in both cases, there has to be some successful test flights before you put astronauts in there. And this was always the case for SpaceX after they had their issue. They were running ahead of Boeing, and then they had this issue. They've already been in the International Space Station with Dragon. They just have been working on this escape capability since then. They have the capability to get up the International Space Station. They don't necessarily have the capability to rescue astronauts in distress. Mm-hmm. So I don't know which horse I want to put money on right now to be first. In either case, I want it to be safe, especially when you're talking humans in space flight. We are all old enough to remember the Challenger, the Columbia. We are all old enough to remember the recent Soyuz rescue that occurred. That is the sort of thing that I'd want to have happen. If a rocket is going bad, I want the astronauts to land safely. And yes, we have to do that. And we have to get them to the International Space Station safely. Mm-hmm. So let's check all these boxes, make sure we're safe before we go up there. I know you mentioned timing is an issue with the Soyuz and the International Space Station. I do get all that. But if this ends up being a successful flight at the end of 2021 or the beginning of 2022 with humans, I'm okay with that as long as they get there and get back safely.
Agreed. And I've said it before on this show, I am actually a fan of the private space race for a variety of different reasons. Largely when you look at sort of how things were able to go stagnant with progress for so many years when it wasn't being done that way. I think it's a good thing, but the big thing that I really, really hope that we get out of these things is the space race. The modern space race encourages people to learn from these mistakes in a safe manner and not push timeline ahead of safety. That's the only thing that I am always very cautious about with stuff like this. And so this last news story that I know Mr. Pioneer here want to talk about is actually related to the Gunna Geek Show, and I'll tell you at the end why it's related, okay?
No, please.
It is the fact that there are some royals which are probably going to be moving to my part of the world. If you didn't know this, SP's a royalist. He loves the real royals. He also loves the Hallmark Channel royals. He loves all sorts of royals. And if you didn't know this, Prince Harry and his wonderful wife, Duchess Meghan Markle have announced that they will be stepping back from their formal royal duties, and they are going to be splitting their time between the UK as well as my part of the world. Legitimately, they were over the holiday season seen in my fair area. People are speculating where it is and things like that. And people believe that maybe they're going to be having somewhat of a future out in this area. The West Coast of BC is a beautiful place. Like, I take it for granted. I admit I take it for granted. It is a very nice place for people to be. obviously part of it is the legalization. And I mean, wait, what? Never mind. We'll leave that alone. But it's just a very nice place to be. And that's the rumors that they're going to be coming over this way. And I know SP was really excited to talk about this. SP, go ahead. Profess your love for the Royals.
So first of all, the rumors are true. They were at Steven's house auditioning for a Gonna Geek podcast that Steven is going to produce.
Tell the truth. So I'm just, they're auditioning to replace us, SP. He's going to replace us with royalty. It is about the only way he could find good replacements for us is royalty, though, because we're that damn good at our job.
Three letters, NDA. Can't confirm or deny it.
So that's why they were over there, is that they were... Well, let's face it, Meghan Markle, she is an actor. And I knew when she went into the royal family that she would want to continue acting just for her personal professional career, not necessarily for the money, although, you know, that doesn't hurt, but just because that's who she is, that's what she does. And none of them are really in the line of succession. So this is not surprising of what has happened here. So Harry decided, hey, let's go over there and let's let you audition. I think they together were decided this. So apparently, allegedly, there was already a work in progress with Disney to do a voiceover role, which she has done once before, and it was all for charity. She got that check marked off. Mm-hmm. She wanted to do it for charity, but I think she found out how much in demand she was when that happened. She's like, oh, okay, well, let's try to do this for real. Let's try to get some serious roles. She's already done some Hallmark Channel stuff. So
I thought this voiceover deal was for an elephant conservation thing. That's what I had read online.
It was, but now she made a deal with Disney. She's in the area which she's worked before with the Hallmark. Deal. The current deal is with Disney.
Yes, for more elephant conservation stuff. It was not for profit, was what I had read in passing.
She made an actual deal. There's two deals. She did a voiceover and then she made another deal.
Can I another just say deal that for the money. Harry and Meghan won't be arguing like this when they come on the show. I'm just going to tell you that.
Okay.
Well, fine then. Then you can just come on right now then.
Regardless, here's the deal. She is going to appear on the Good Day Geek Network. She's going to be in a Hallmark Channel movie. She's going to work for Disney. And last but not least, since the CW apparently doesn't have enough superhero shows, she's going to star in her own CW superhero show that is DC Comics based. Who do you think she is going to play, Chris?
Nobody.
What DC comic character could she play? Steven, you know, you talk to her. What does she want? Who does she want to play?
She's going to play the DC comic character Black Widow.
I give up.
Okay. So this brings me to 3 points. Number one, you're welcome to drop by anytime you want, my pal Hair. Feel free to come by Hair. Secondly,
there's plenty up for you at Steven's house.
Secondly, sure, we'll get you on the podcast. I don't know if you want to talk geeky stuff, but you're welcome to. And third, the reason why this relates to the GunnaGeek.com show is because there is now a clock on you to send SP that space debris to my house. Because how are you going to feel if you send that space station crashing down to my house to find out that Meghan and Harry were in it at the time with me?
Let's clear the air here. It was never me that was sending the space station towards you. It was the Chinese. They have something against you. I don't know what kind of mic review you did that you pissed them off, but they are targeting you for space junk.
Fair enough. But anyways, now you've got a clock on there. So that's why it relates. But
not me.
I had to mention it because SP, we've had a little offline chat about this, and it's just kind of funny. It's kind of funny of all the places in the world that it looks like they might be coming to. Before we go, for the post audience, there's a little thing that I think we're going to acknowledge, and maybe we'll have a future conversation about. But during this show, there was a little bit of a moment that if you listen past the credit, you'll hear it in the post show. The little edit point will be there. You can see the way it all unfolded. There was a little thing that came up And there was an error. And during this error moment, which was removed from this past part of the show, SP made a comment. I think it was SP made a comment about I needing to own what, SP? What did you say?
A Stream Deck.
You said I needed to own a Stream Deck. To which you can see, again, post-show, see the reactions. You can see that I held up what, Chris Farrell?
A Stream Deck.
It is true. I did make the dive into the Stream Deck world. And I specifically, this was the thing, I've had it for a few weeks. I specifically made the decision. I was not going to show the Stream Deck, mention the Stream Deck. I haven't told anybody about the Stream Deck.
Nope.
Until somebody made that exact comment, which was, you should own a Stream Deck. So I have to say, it was quicker than I thought. I thought I was going to get a few weeks out of it. But I do own a Stream Deck, and I will talk about it more in the future. I'm probably going to talk about it on Better Podcasting as well, because I am very, very happy to eat crow right now and say Chris, SP, and Suncast were entirely right. I should have owned one sooner. The software, I didn't know the software functionality of it. And I'm talking about the stuff outside of OBS, outside of XSplit. I'm talking about the way that it can couple playing audio with then doing a scene transition. It has solved several problems that I had trying to do two actions at once. And I am very happy to eat crow. And again, I haven't decided for sure. I might have a very bold statement to make on Better Podcasting about it for hobby podcasters. So we will see where that leads. I got a little bit more to try. I've only had this show twice, one Better Podcasting to really give it a good spin. But yeah, I was wrong. They were right. Go ahead, take that right now and write down the time code.
Someone pull that video clip out. I need that as my voice.
I've got
as
the
my
audio recorded. This is good.
I need a ringtone that is Steven saying he was right and I was, excuse me, he was wrong and I was right.
You were right.
I'm so aghast and just enjoying this feeling. I can't get my words out right now. Oh my God. How many years has it been that we've been like, Steven, just buy a Stream Deck? No, I'm going to keep using these hotkey macros on my laptop, on my keyboard. Steven, just get a Stream Deck. It's going to be a lot easier. And we were right.
Which, by the way, I do want to talk about
it. Sweet vindication.
I do want to talk about it in the future, because unless I'm doing something wrong, and again, more research, this is really just off the cuff because this happened live on the show. There is a really weird way that it's interacting that I think is a shortcoming of it as far as programming hotkeys go, but we'll leave it at that. Also, last week, if you watched the live show, there was a couple of weird technical things that happened. That was because I forgot to put some things on the Stream Deck and I had to go and look them up at the time.
Been there.
So on that note, let's go ahead and play this for episode number 317 of the official GunnaGeek.com show. I'm Steven John Drew saying, yep, got a Stream Deck. I was wrong. They were right.
I'm Chris Farrell, and I, too, love my Stream Deck.
And I'm SP, saying if there's anything you want us to talk about CES 2020, let us know. We'll talk about it in the future couple of weeks. See you guys next time. Bye.
Bye. Oh, and Suncast really does deserve credit on this as well. He was pushing me hard, too. Bye.
Thanks for checking out another episode of the official GunnaGeek.com show. If you like the show, please give us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts or a thumbs up on YouTube. You can always join us for our live recording sessions, which stream Mondays at 8:45 p.m. Eastern at www.geeks.live. And remember, you can find our full back catalog at GunnaGeek.com/show. If you're itching for more geeky content, check out other shows on GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Voice work was by Emily Prokop of the Story Behind podcast. That's it for this episode. We hope to see you back again next week.
To the tech that they are enjoying today. And once that is discovered,
not switching.
You need a Stream Deck.
What?
Mm-hmm. You need a Stream Deck.
And once that is discovered, then you're going to see a lot of lawsuits going back and forth on that.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's very interesting. And I think you're right. And the other thing that might come to do with it is the fact that Chris Farrell said this 1,000 times, that